Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 247 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, I'll be continuing the rapid review series for the USMLE Step 2 CK exam. And this will be series 40. So let's get right into it. This should be a relatively shorter podcast. So what if they give you a question about like a 51-year-old female? They tell you that she has been having like this right-sided headache for the last like 4 days. And she has like just like diffuse like muscle aches, muscle pains. And then they give you some labs and you notice that her ESR and her creatine kinase are both elevated. If you see that, I really hope you're thinking about like giant cell arteritis, right? Remember, this is also known as temporal arteritis. And don't forget that those people can have like proximal muscle tenderness, right? That's called a polymyalgia rheumatica. Right, and also they can also have jaw claudication, right? When they chew, it hurts, right? Whenever you see stuff like that, you want to think about giant cell arteritis. Remember, it's also called temporal arteritis. And your next step in management on a test, right, is to go ahead and give them a high dose corticosteroid therapy, and then you can ask questions later. You can do a you have a couple of days to do a temporal artery biopsy in those people. Okay, now what if they give you a question about a they give you a question about a 27-year-old male. You know, they tell you that he has been having like that he has had like a history of like multiple suicide attempts, and that they notice that over the last like 24 hours, his like close acquaintances have been noticing that he has been, you know, he has been having like bloody bowel movements. He has been having hemoptysis, he has been having like nasal bleeds, he has been having abdominal pain. And then they ask like, what's the most likely like toxic ingestion in this patient? And, you know, they'll give you a bunch of options. They can say like, I don't know, like carbon monoxide poisoning, like just weird stuff. If you see something like this, you want to think about the person potentially ingesting rat poison, right? You want to think about rat poison. Remember, rat poison contains warfarin, right? So that warfarin can cause very severe bleeding. Remember, warfarin is one of those drugs where the pharmacology is still high yield to know for step 2 CK. Remember, it inhibits vitamin K epoxide reductase, right? So you're not going to have gamma carboxylation of factors 2, 7, 9, and 10 on a protein CNS, right? But basically, it makes a person bleed. So again, those are all high yield things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Okay, now, what if they give you a question about like a 22-year-old guy? They tell you that, you know, for the past 6 months, he has been having a lot of like trouble breathing, and that he has like low back pain. And then they tell you that, oh, that they perform like some pulmonary function studies, and he's noted to have like a restrictive pattern of lung disease. If you see this, I would really hope you're thinking about ankylosing spondylitis, right? I really hope you're thinking about ankylosing spondylitis. Remember, ankylosing spondylitis, right? Again, those people, right, with all the spinal problems they get, sometimes they can cause a restricted expansion of the lungs, right? It can cause a restricted expansion of the lungs because the thoracic cavity is almost kind of contorted, especially in people that have severe disease. So remember that those people, basically, they'll have restrictive lung disease, but this will be an example of a person having restrictive lung disease, right, but with a normal DLCO. Again, I know you may be like, Divine, restrictive lung disease in ankylosing spondylitis. Again, there's no point, don't panic. It's just something that your friends at the MBME love these days. Because again, the MBME is not like they can just invent new knowledge. Can't really do that, right? But basically what they do these days is they ask a bunch of questions, right? That they just find novel ways to test something that you already know, right? So again, just something high yield again to keep at the back of your mind. Okay. Now, what if they give you a question about like a couple? They tell you that, you know, they've been working, that, you know, they are both gardeners or something like that, right? And then they tell you that over the last like 12 hours, they've been having like just diffuse muscle weakness, blurry vision. They have like ptosis on fundoscopic exam. And they tell you that they have like, they've been having diarrhea. They've been having like constipation. They've been feeling very hot. They've almost been like hyperthermic, right? If you see this, right, then you want to potentially think about a toxidrome, right? You want to think about botulism on the test, right? Remember, the botulinum toxin, right? It cleaves snare proteins, so you're not able to release acetylcholine at the neuromuscular junction, right? So those people have like flaccid paralysis. Again, they classically test this in kids, you know, with honey, or they can test it in people that are consuming like home canned goods or whatever, right? But again, just usually it's in kids on tests, but again, these days, your friends at the MBME, they're beginning to go after this stuff with adults, right? So again, that's something you just want to make sure that you can keep at the back of your mind on exams. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient? You know, they tell you that it's like a 23-year-old sexually active male, right? And they tell you that over the last like 3-4 weeks, he has noticed these flesh-colored like growths on his genitals, right? If you see that, I would really hope you're thinking about condyloma acuminata. Remember, that is caused by HPV, right? Remember your HPVs, right? So HPV 1 and 6 causes genital warts, right? HPV 6 and 11. HPV 1 and 6 causes plantar warts. HPV 6 and 11 causes genital warts, right? And then HPV 16, 18, and those in the 30s cause cervical cancer, right? So again, that's something you kind of want to keep at the back of your mind on exams. And how do we treat condyloma acuminata, right? You can use podophyllin. Podophyllin is a classic agent you'd see commonly tested on exams, right? So podophyllin is you can use that topical agent, and typically it helps pretty well with genital warts. Although for the most part, genital warts on its own would resolve without you needing to necessarily treat it. Okay, now what if they give you a question about like, let's say it's like a 27-year-old male. They tell you that he has a history of type 1 diabetes, and that over the last 2 days, he has been having like a very severe headache. They tell you that he has like bilateral Babinski signs, has like, you know, some of these like neurodeficits that, you know, tell you that there's something wrong in his brain somewhere, right? And then they show you some labs and you notice that, oh, his glucose is like 700, his bicarb is like 10, right? And his pH is like 7.16, right? So he's in DKA, right? And then they tell you that, oh, you obtain imaging of the brain and you find like a ring enhancing lesion in his brain, right? Or they can tell you that you find something that is exerting like mass effect in the brain. If you see that, again, I would really hope you're thinking about, so what bug should you think about here? I'd hope you're thinking about mucormycosis, right? I'd hope you're thinking about mucormycosis. Again, remember, the mucor species, right, you know, like rhizopus, for example, right? Those things tend to cause like sinusitis in a person that has like a history of diabetes, right? So if you see like facial pain, like darkness of the face, stuff like that in a diabetic, right? That's mucormycosis. But again, your friends at the MBME can find more inventive ways of testing the same pathology. They can talk about like, essentially like any like major infection in the head, right? As something, or in the ears even, as something that can be caused by mucormycosis, especially in a diabetic that is in DKA. So again, just all big things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. And then what if they give you a question about like a 62-year-old female? You know, they tell you that over the last 3 days, she has been having like pain in her mid back. And then, you know, they tell you that her temperature is like 98.6, pulse is like 70 beats per minute, respiratory rate is 14 breaths per minute. They tell you that physical exam is unremarkable, right? Other than just like tenderness in her mid thoracic spine. And then they give you a bunch of labs, and you notice that all those labs are normal, but you notice that the alk force is elevated. If you see that, what are you thinking about? I would really, really hope that you're thinking about osteoporosis, right? Under those circumstances, this person essentially has some kind of a compression fracture, right? This person has a compression fracture. And please don't forget, right, that when people have compression fractures in osteoporosis, let's say a woman is postmenopausal, right? And she has like a compression fracture. It's almost always in the vertebral body. That is the most common location. After a vertebral body, the second most common location is the hip, right? And again, remember, the reason why women that are postmenopausal have this problem is because they are no longer producing adequate amounts of estrogen. So because they are not making estrogen, right, you have decreased synthesis of osteoprotegerin. And if you're not able to produce osteoprotegrin, right, then you'll have more interaction between the RANK ligand, right, and the RANK receptor, right, between the RANK ligand and the RANK receptor, and that will cause more activation of osteoclast. So you'll have like a net increase in osteoclast activity compared to osteoblast activity, right? And that will ultimately give rise to like resorption of the person's bone. So again, just all high yield things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Okay, now what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that this patient recently bought like a used humidifier at like an antique store and has been using it for the past, you know, like 2-3 weeks. But that over the last like 4 days, this patient has been having shortness of breath. This patient has been having like high fevers, has been having diarrhea. And then they give you some labs. You notice that this patient's platelet count is like 30,000. And you notice that the patient's sodium is like 127. What are you thinking about here? I would really hope you're thinking about Legionella, right? Remember Legionella pneumophila, right? Remember like this thing, it's one of these, maybe like divine used humidifier. Well, that used humidifier, right, may have been infected with Legionella, right? Remember, anything that kind of like dissipates like aerosols around, right, or like water, right, those things can potentially cause Legionella, right? So what are the ways they can test Legionella on your test? It can be a person that's using like a new humidifier. It can be a person that is using like a humidifier or went to a business conference, or it can be an outbreak kind of pneumonia, like in a hospital, right? It can be something you get from like a water cooling system, right? And the way I think about Legionella, remember Legionella, right, tends to cause, I think of it as like pneumonia plus, right? So usually people that have Legionella, they'll have like diarrhea. If you look at their labs, they may have like hyponatremia, they may have like hyperkalemia, right? They may have like thrombocytopenia on labs, right? And remember, these people that have Legionella, you'll make the diagnosis, right, is you do the urine antigen test, right? And for the most part, these people deserve macrolides. You give them macrolides. If they want to do like some kind of step one throwback on your exam, they can try to ask you that, you know, remember that, again, it's a silver-stained organism. I don't know, I just feel like in general, these organisms that are silver-stained, they tend to end up being pretty high yield for exams, right? So like Legionella is one big one. That'll be pneumonia, obviously. Pneumocystis jirovetsi, right, is also a silver stain organism, right? So HIV patient, positive silver stain organisms in a bronchial alveolar lavage or like induced sputum sample, right? That's going to be pneumocystis jirovetsi. Remember, you treat that with trimethoprim sulfonothoxazole, right? And then if you're looking at things from the other perspective, if you're dealing with if you're dealing let's say you're dealing with a patient that has been having like, you know, like really bad epigastric pain, it's worsened by meals, you want to think about H. pylori, right? Remember, that's also another silver stain positive organism, right? That's another silver stain positive organism. And then if they ask you like, what is the mechanism behind the electrolyte abnormalities, like these hyponatremia, hyperkalemia, and all that stuff in a person that has a Legionella, one thing I think I will encourage you to think about is the person potentially having some kind of interstitial nephritis, right? Just think about interstitial nephritis. Like those people can develop acute kidney injury. Remember, when your kidney doesn't work, you're going to have like hyponatremia, and you're not going to be able to excrete potassium appropriately, right? So you'll have hyperkalemia. I mean, think about all the people you know that have, that are on dialysis, right? Or they miss their dialysis, right? You always see their potassium. Their potassium is like super, 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 super high, right? Super, super high. Okay, now what if they give you a question about like a fitness instructor and they tell you that, oh, over the last, this person teaches like CrossFit or weightlifting or whatever, and they tell you that over the last like 2 weeks, this person has been having like numbness, weakness in like his hands, in his forearm, like his right hand, his right forearm, and they tell you that he has like a barely perceptible, right? So they tell you he has a barely perceptible radial and ulnar pulse. If you see that, I would really hope you're thinking about like thoracic outlet syndrome, right? Thoracic outlet syndrome, basically, right, when these people have like, you know, these like super hypertrophied muscles because they're like super fit, right, sometimes those muscles can have like these spasms and they can begin to compress some of the upper extremity arteries, right? So they can compress like the subclavian, they can even compress some parts of the brachial plexus, right? So you can see the person having like signs of brachial plexus injury. You can see the person having like almost like claudication of that extremity, right? Because there is again diminished blood supply, right? So again, just all things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Now, what if they give you a question about like a 71-year-old guy, you know, they tell you that over the last like 3 hours he's been having like chest pain relating to his jaw, and then they tell you that on the way to the hospital this person passes away. If you see that, right, I would really hope you're thinking more along the lines of like some kind of ventricular arrhythmia, right? Usually VFib, right? Remember, if a person has an MI, if they die within the first 24 hours, the most common cause of death is going to be some kind of ventricular arrhythmia, like a ventricular fibrillation. Okay, so I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. It's just I really wanted to get out a podcast this morning. And again, it's a rapid review. Again, I try to keep those to about like somewhere between like 15 to 25 minutes. And again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for... in fact, I won't say one-on-one tutoring. I'll say I offer tutoring for the USMLE exams on a somewhat limited basis, kind of depending on my schedule. And then I also offer classes, right, for Step 2 CK. At least you see, I've been having this 10-hour Step 2 CK class for the last couple of I've done it now about four times, and again, the vast majority of people that I've attended have found it to be really helpful. The next one is going to be taking place on the 25th of July. Remember, it's 6 to 10 a.m. Pacific time, noon to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and then 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific time. And again, we cover like 700 topics and concepts and vignettes and scenarios that essentially will touch on all the high yields from like PEDS, surgery, OB-GYN, neuropsych, internal medicine. And again, I'll give you a time to, you know, kind of ask questions. But again, it's a very high-level course. It's a very high-yield course. And again, many people have found it to be extremely helpful. So if that's something you're interested in, basically once the class is full, then I stop registering people. So if you want to register, you can either shoot me an email at divineinterventionpodcasts@gmail.com or register on the website divineinterventionpodcast.com. Just shoot me an email from there. I will show you how to register. And... please subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's called Divine Intervention USMLE Podcasts and Videos. Please also subscribe to the podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. It's on Google Play. And if you have any questions or any particular podcast you'd like me to make, or if there are any classes you'd like me to hold, just feel free to reach out to me and I'll be happy to point you in the right direction. So thank you for listening to this podcast. There is no life lesson today. I'll bring up a life lesson in one of my next podcasts. So thank you for listening. God bless you. Have a wonderful day.